Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeb, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And Lynette Morgan has the week off. I think she will be back next week. Mark Holland filling in for her. First time I've flown solo, and thanks Lynette for all your training.
She did a good job, didn't she?
We'll see. We've got one more hour to go. Hey, three doctors with us today, Dr. Mixon, of course, Dr. Umeb, and special guest Dr. Christine Brazel. First time, you were really scared about doing radio today. You said you didn't know if you wanted to do this or not.
Oh, no, I was just a little nervous.
First time. Well, you're doing wonderful. All three doctors would love to talk to you with your questions. The number to call is 206-644-6006. And I kind of lost track of who we're going to next. I think we have Steve in Bellevue. Steve in Bellevue, you have a question for the doctors?
I do. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I listened to the interesting explanation of long COVID, but what it made me think was, I wonder what the doctor's recommendation is in terms of boosters, who would be taking them, how often, and what's the long-term plan for this COVID debacle?
Well, again, I cannot impart truth with a capital T here. I can only tell you what I think, all right? I'm not taking a booster, and that's because this virus seems to have followed the typical viral pattern.
Well, wait. Initially, we did take the boosters. I took one, and you also.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But let me go back. Typically, when a virus moves into the human species, it's fairly lethal. And it kills off the most susceptible people. And then the survivors, by natural selection, tend to be less susceptible. And the virus tends to alter. It changes because our immune systems attack the virus, and that alters its mutations, and its mutations affect our immune systems. And so over time, the viruses tend to become more and more infectious, but less and less dangerous. And that seems to be exactly what's happened with COVID. All of the more recent variants have been very infectious. They spread like wildfire, but they don't make most people very sick. And couple that with the fact that I approve of Mr. Trump's decision with the information he had, but I disapprove of the general process. You know, when this virus first hit the human race, the Royal Academy in London was predicting, you know, 20, 30 million deaths in America within the first 6 months. And so that's what they told Mr. Trump. And Mr. Trump said, well, we can't have that. Let's get a virus. Let's get a vaccine and let's do it right now. And he got rid of all the bureaucracy. And they got us a vaccine in 8 months, and that was a great win. The downside of that is we got it in 8 months because we didn't have years of testing to see how safe the vaccine was. And so we kind of turned the entire human race into a massive experiment with a brand new, very rapidly acquired vaccine. The reasoning behind it made perfectly good sense. But the effect was we've got vaccines out there that we're still learning about the problems associated with them. And that's back to Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. The vaccines help, the vaccines hurt. We're just now discovering all the bad things they do. So, you know, I like many things in life, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And that's what we got here. Right now, most people, unless you are very elderly, very frail, immunocompromised, or morbidly obese, you are not at real risk of dying or getting terribly sick from COVID, the current variants out there. So, you know, when I caught COVID April of last year, I had a runny nose for 3 days. That was my COVID. Okay? I was on a car trip with my wife and daughter. So the three of us are locked together in a car. I got a sniffle and a runny nose, so I went and I got a COVID test. And the test was instantly positive. But I looked at the box and said, well, this damn thing was made in China. I don't trust it. So I went into another drugstore and I bought a different test. And this one was made in America. And it was also instantly positive. So I said, okay. I've got two tests from two different countries, two different manufacturers. I must have the disease. I kept waiting to get sick. I had a runny nose for 3 days and I got well. Okay, my experience with this episode of COVID was pretty benign. My wife and daughter, who were in the car with me when I'm doing my sniffling and sneezing for those 3 days, neither one of them got sick. So I must not have been shedding an awful lot of virus into the air, because in that closed quarters, if I was shedding a lot of virus, they'd have caught it, you know. But I'm in my 70s. My wife is in her 40s. My child was only 10 years old, and she both of the girls are lean and fit. So they didn't get sick at all. Their immune systems just sloughed this thing right off. So now I'm looking at the boosters. And, you know, they've taken the first boosters off the market. They only now have the bivalent booster available. And I'm saying, okay, do I want to take a new vaccine that has just been put on the market but has not had a hoot's worth of testing done on it for a disease that just gives me a sniffle? No. My answer is no, I'm not doing that. Now, if I were 100 pounds overweight, if I had terrible heart disease, if I had been getting chemotherapy for cancer and suppressing my immune response, if I were rheumatoid arthritis and was getting immunomodulant drugs, yeah, I might. You know, I'd seriously consider it. But I'm lean, I'm strong, I'm old. That's my one down, you know, my one risk factor. But I don't have any other risk factors. So my answer is no for me, but I can't tell you that that's the right thing to do. That's just my decision, and those are the reasons I made the decision.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So the last question would be, is the minimum response to the virus a result of so many people taking the shot or the booster?
Well, you know, interestingly, in 2021 and 22, after the boosters or the vaccines went into widespread use, most of the people hospitalized had the vaccine, which is kind of interesting. Now the question is, did they get sick because of the vaccine, or did they get sick because they had the vaccine and they stopped being careful? I don't know. You know, were the people that took the vaccine primarily elderly? Because, you know, more than 90% of the people over 75 have had the vaccine, and they are right. The oldest, the most fragile, the most likely to get sick. So is that why, you know, that most of the hospitalizations were with vaccinated people? Because a lot of the vaccinated people were the most fragile, and also the ones, remember, the vaccine lost 50% of its potency within 5 months. And the boosters were losing 50% of the potency within 10 weeks, 2.5 months. So, okay, you've been vaccinated, you've been boosted, but now it's 6 months up the road. Your vaccine, your antibody level is about 1/3 or 1/4 of what it was at its peak. all right, now if you're fragile and at risk, maybe you do get sick and go to the hospital. There's just enormous variation in the possibilities here. And so,
yeah.
And that's why I said I can't give you truth with a capital T. I can give you variables. I can give you things I observe, things I think, the decisions I've made for me and my family. And it may turn out 6 months from now I've totally changed my mind because something happened and we got a really nasty variant swirling through the world. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I appreciate that. And I guess the answer is stay tuned to see if Dr. Mixon changes.
That's right. But let me tell you one. I'm going to take another couple of minutes. I think I was one of the first people in America to get COVID. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because in 2019, my wife and daughter were in China. They were on national Chinese TV for the Western, for the Western New Year's, Chinese New Year's in late February. But they did a December 31st show in China, and then they went to a marathon with 35,000 people packed together, and they and everybody in their party got a really nasty cough. And they were coughing their guts up, and yet nobody knew about COVID yet. It was still in 2019. And so they came home on January 4th, promptly gave it to me. I've never coughed so hard in my life. I thought I was going to break a rib. I was coughing so hard. But in January of 2020, the dogma was, if you don't run a high fever, we don't even test you for COVID. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't running a high fever. I just had a horrible cough. Yeah. And so I didn't get tested. And so, but I was sick for about 6 weeks. Okay. Was that COVID? I don't know. But the temporal association with the family coming back from China, when we know it was spreading through China then, I think I might have been one of the earliest COVID cases. Mm. Who knows? And maybe that's why when I got the second case in April of last year, it was so mild. Mm. Maybe the natural immunity from that first nasty segment protected me for the second one. And then I threw the vaccines on top of that. Lots of variables, my friend. Wish I had answers.
Yeah. Well, appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks for the call. That opens up a line for you to call in your questions, 206-644-6006. Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Back with more of your questions. Several people on the line. We'll get to you here in just a few moments.
Really, 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 are you really mine?
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. Lots of questions, lots of people on the phone, and you can call in your question right now at 206-644-6006. First time filling in like this, who chooses his music? Is that mostly you or you?
You know,
they're one of us.
Jerry Berg used to choose the music.
Jerry Berg, okay. Yeah.
And so, you know, I kind of go through cycles of my music taste. And so I'd like to kind of give you a list of some of my favorite ones that you can kind of put in here. And 1 week I'd like to do some cowboy music, and another week I want to do some, you know, some German or some Spanish or some Chinese.
Yeah. We have a lot of people that like the music, Jerry.
I know. But you know, we've been doing the same cotton picking music for 25 years.
Okay. That is true.
So why do you say we move the scale up a little bit to something only 25 years old? Because it was 25 years old when we started it 25 years ago.
1970s are calling.
That's right.
Want their turn. Calling.
Yeah.
A little bit of, so we can maybe have some Bee Gees on here.
Some Bee
Gees. Staying alive.
That's right.
Staying alive. That's
and then, you know, like I said.
Well, I'd like Taylor Swift personally. Yeah, but
Swift. Sure.
Will the next Ass Alive and kick in?
Yeah. There you go.
You know, and then let's pick a week and we'll do feminist music, you know. We're going to get Man, I Feel Like a Woman, you know. I mean, come on. Yeah, let's just do some fun stuff. You know?
All right.
Well, lay it on me. I took over for Jerry, and I'll do what I can. Oh,
right. Oh,
well, there we go. A little AC/DC.
That's right.
Thunderstruck, I think, is what that is. Somebody's having fun back at the studio.
All right. Okay.
Well, hey, let's go to Rose next. She has a question from West Seattle. Rose, what's your question for the doctors? Are you still there, Rose?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you're on the air. How can we help, dear?
Yeah, you was talking about the sleep medication, mm-hmm. GABA.
Yeah, GABA is one. GABA is one of the ingredients in the sleep supplement that I put together.
Okay, can you get that by itself? Because I have tried your relief medication, but I can't tolerate the Coumarin?
The curcumin?
It upsets my stomach.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, the sleep medication doesn't have any of that in it, okay? It's only got three things. It's got theanine, which is the sedative in green tea. You know, people drink tea to relax and mellow out.
So
these pills have a lot of theanine from green tea. Then they've got a little bit of melatonin, 1 milligram per pill. And then they've got the GABA, which is a neurotransmitter that kind of makes everything relax and mellow out. And here's a kind of an interesting, and I don't know how the heck they did it. When I was putting this together, one of the research papers that I found was they actually did EEGs, electroencephalograms, on mice when they gave them this formula. And I always wondered, how did all those little tiny electrodes on a mouse head, you know? But they said that the mice, when they got this combination, went to sleep quickly. They went into a very deep sleep. And when they woke up, they were alert and active, and they didn't seem to be hungover at all. So I had...
How do you spell GABA?
G-A-B-A.
Okay, and how do you spell that first ingredient that you
Theanine. T-H-E-O-A. Theanine. T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you're going a little too fast. I'm 81 years old. I'm kind of slow.
Okay.
T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. Okay, and the melatonin, I think I know how to spell that. Can I purchase those tablets by itself?
Yes, you sure can. But, you know, it's a lot more expensive if you buy three separate things and put it together. It's cheaper if you just buy the sleep by Relief Factor. Go, if you've got a computer, go to relieffactor.com.
No, I don't have a computer.
Okay.
We can call our front desk, I think.
Yeah, then she can call our front desk.
Okay. Which is?
866.
Oh, go ahead.
866-86-YOUNG. And those numbers are 96864.
864.
Okay.
Toll free. 86 Young.
That's right. 866. 86964. All right.
Okay. All right. I'll call and get some more information about that.
Get some and try it out and see how you like it.
Okay. Thank you, Rose.
Bye-bye, dear.
Hey, let's move on to John, actually calling from out of state. Is this correct, John, in Yardley, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, hello. Yardley, Pennsylvania, yeah.
Okay. How can we help you, sir?
I got a call from my brother Mark, who lives in Washington, and he said, hey, he listens to you guys all the time. He said, you got to get on there and listen and maybe give you guys a call about my problem. I had an incident with a knee. I was working in California on a construction project, and my knee flared up. and for no reason. I had a knee injury in the past, and it sort of crippled me. I had to leave the job. And then I got home to relax, and then all these other joints started getting attacked, my shoulders and my hands, you know, especially. And so then I went to see all kinds of doctors, and I got x-rays, MRIs, CAT scans, and everything sort of mellowed out, and there was no diagnosis. So I'm wondering, you know, based on your guys' history of patients, like what could be going on with me? And then I have to deal with sleep and pain. And I was wondering about, for example, taking Advil and then mixing it with, you know, like turmeric pills or other stuff. And is that being stupid? And, you know, should I just try to deal with the pain and maybe take a product you have and see how it works? And then, you know, if that doesn't work, try something else.
Sure. Okay, well, let's talk about this. The pattern you're describing sounds like an autoimmune attack, as though your immune system has decided that probably the synovium in your joint doesn't belong to you and has decided to attack and get rid of it. We see this in diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, which is the most common one.
And trauma can precipitate something like that.
Yes, certainly.
And can infection or the vaccine response.
Yes.
Well, but he specifically mentioned that, you know, a traumatic episode. Yeah. So it could have started it all off.
It could have. You know, we it's always problematic trying to figure out what triggered an autoimmune response. But that's what it sounds like just from your history. And the typical pattern is these tends to wax and wane. They flare up. And then after a while, they cool off. They don't go all the way to nothing, but they get better, and then they'll flare again, and they'll get better, and they flare again and get better. If the problem is very bad and you're actually seeing degeneration in the joints, then you probably need to get on a immunomodifier drugs. There are some very fancy drugs now that suppress your immune system's ability to attack yourself. Those drugs have real downsides, though. I mean, they're very effective, but A, they're outrageously expensive, you know, $1,500, $1,800 a month, and B, they lower your resistance to every infection, you know, on the market. So tuberculosis, cancers, all sorts of problems get more common on people taking those drugs. So, you know, we're back to Dr. Mixon's first rule. Anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. There's downsides to every decision. If things are cooling off and are not giving you a lot of grief, there is a product that I've been selling for a few years now nationally. It's called Relief Factor. It has four things in it, all of which decrease your body's inflammatory response and decreases pain and inflammation. And the best way to take that is I tell people take three packets a day till the pain goes away and then cut the dose down as much as you can to stay comfortable. So I you know, three a day, you may need three a day for 3 or 4 weeks. And I've seen a few people need it for 6 or 8 weeks. But then once it's cooled off, once you've got the inflammation down, then go to two a day and see if that holds it. And if two a day is keeping you comfortable, might try one a day and see if that does. It takes more to get it suppressed than it does to keep it suppressed. And my general rule of medicine is the proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job. Because the higher the dose of anything, the higher the complications of anything.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Mixon also always advocates getting a proper diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And in your case, you have seen the doctors, but you don't have a diagnosis yet.
Yep.
In which case, treating an acute flare-up once in a while with Relief Factor makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is an autoimmune disease and if it is waxing and waning, then you should see a physician, and the right physician is probably a rheumatologist, and see them when you have a flare-up. That's the time that they can do a blood test to look for active antibodies, and they can do imaging, so x-rays, to see if there's any erosive disease of the joint or not.
That's right.
And those will help in diagnosing you and in managing you appropriately.
Because another of my many aphorisms is, if you don't know exactly what you're treating, the chances of treating it effectively are pretty poor. So First diagnosis, then therapy.
Yeah. I talked to some friends and family, and they brought up the term ALS. And then I heard, you know, someone I know about 5 miles away.
Lyme disease is more like what you're describing as opposed to ALS. But
in your part of the country, I think Lyme before ALS.
Yeah. We can talk more if you want after the break, but we have to take a break.
The music says we got to go for a minute.
Okay, John, I guess hang in there, and that opens up a line here pretty quick for you to call in your question at 206-644-6006. Leading Edge Medicine will return in moments. With more of Leading Edge Medicine and your calls at 206-644-6006. I think we have Randy back on the phone. I guess we dropped Randy a little earlier, a little bit prematurely.
Is the other person holding on that we were just talking
no,
to?
No, he dropped off.
John dropped off. Okay, fair enough.
Back to Randy now. Randy,
hello, Randy.
Up?
Hey, I'm back. Thanks. When we left, you were talking about my... Go ahead.
I'm just doing my, who is the Terminator? Technical the Terminator.
Oh,
that's
I'll be back.
I'll be back.
Arnold, baby.
All right.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
Anyway, we were talking about a pinched nerve, but
yes.
Let's set that aside. You know, I'm taking gabapentin and Damodol. I call it Damodol. I guess
it's Tramadol.
Tramadol, yes.
Okay.
Tramadol.
But I do like I love your variation of it, actually.
It's how I remember it, and it's how I feel about this pain. So it's a good memory jogger. But
yes, it is.
Those two meds together knock me out, so I don't have any problems. I don't have any problem sleeping. I mean, my problem is getting from the toilet to the bed before I fall asleep.
I would expect so. That's a potent combination, my friend. So
It sure is. I wish it did more for the pain, but it does put me to sleep. The thing that's going to maybe make a difference for some people listening to the call is that apparently there are insurance companies that do pay for the Galleri test. Now, I was a little surprised by this because I had taken the Galleri test and a friend that I had convinced to start with longevity came back and we were comparing notes. He said, yeah, I took that Galleri test. And I said, well, yeah, it's too bad that the insurance doesn't cover it. And he said, oh, mine did.
Wow.
I said,
which company?
You have United Healthcare like me? And he said, oh, no. It wasn't United Healthcare that paid for it. It was my life insurance company.
Oh, that's interesting.
His life insurance company, and I have the same life insurance company, so I'm going to go back.
Yes.
And see if they'll pay for this retroactively. I thought you might like to know that. I was kind of surprised.
Okay. Well, of course, at my age, the life insurance costs more than the test by a long shot.
Remember, we don't share your data, our patients' data, with any outside carrier. You're paying us for your services.
Yeah.
So your information for anything that you do with us is your property. What you choose to do with it is up to you.
Yeah. Here's the problem with that: having your life insurance company pay for it is if it comes back positive, you won't be able to get insured.
You are now obliged to let them know.
Yeah, you're required. Well, they have to. They're legally required or entitled to a copy of your test.
Yes.
Would that open up the possibility of them requesting all the other medical records from the clinic?
Sure. Sure.
They might not
want
to have disclosed.
Sure, they can. Yeah. Yes, and you know we walk that that tightrope. Because we do not bill insurance, we do not take money from insurance. We just take your money to treat you and take care of you. Your results are your property, and we are very cognizant of that, and we do not give that information out to other carriers.
Now, the problem with having anything, even having your health insurance company pay for it, is that once the insurance company has the data, anybody with a financial interest in your health is now legally under HIPAA entitled to look at it. Even the IRS gets copies of your medical record now if you are getting it paid for by insurance.
And the ethical dilemma is, is it your responsibility to let them know?
Yes.
Because, yeah.
See, so when we do your testing, we do all of any of the medical care we do, we tell no one. I won't tell your wife or your kids about it.
Yeah.
I mean, the only people that we tell about your health is when you tell us to tell and you put it in writing.
That's right.
But if you have not in writing instructed us to share your data, we are probably the last clinic in the country almost that gives you real privacy to your medical information. So that's the upside of paying out of pocket to us is it stays private.
Well, obviously, my friend and I didn't think about the fact that this life insurance company could draw not just the information about the gallery test, but it sounds like, from the comment Dr. Braswell mentioned, that they are now entitled to go after all of his records?
Well, all of the records that he knows about, or that they know about, yes. And so,
I mean, they can request everything we have, and if you have given us permission to release one, you have given us permission to release them all.
But when someone asks us for a patient's medical record, our answer is simply no.
Yeah, not until you give us written permission.
Because we will not even confirm you're a patient.
So say you give us permission to release your result to your life insurance company. Well, they can come after everything we have that is yours.
Yeah.
But you can't just say, oh, just give them this and not that. Now they've opened that door.
Yeah.
There is a sensitivity for our patients who do carry the higher risk gene with Alzheimer's that they don't want that information disclosed.
That's yes.
Because right. Some of the tests we do expose the fact that you're at very high risk for specific problems. And so, again, I just think it's your doctor's business. It's your business. It's nobody else's business. So we don't talk to the IRS. We don't talk to your insurance companies. We don't talk to your kids. We don't talk to your neighbors. We talk to nobody. And we will not even admit you're a patient unless you've told us to tell them that you're a patient. So if they send us and say, we would like
to be in writing.
Yeah. If we get a thing that says, we would like the records on John Doe, we just say, John Doe? Who's that?
I mean, we do have patients who require us to send information, but they tell us in advance that this request is coming. They sign a release document with us. We know to expect it, and then we will send the information.
Yeah, and like we have patients that are commercial pilots, you know, and they feel ethically bound to let their companies know what they're doing, and so. You know, they tell us about it, and we'll share that with their airline, but only if you tell us to.
Well, I love this policy, of course. What I'm thinking about, though, is the fact that my friend and I have I know he's probably done the same thing I've done, and that is I've told you folks to release that information to my primary care physician and to my cardiologist. And there's several other medical people because I want these people to know what I'm, you know, all the tests that I'm getting
right.
And so forth. But what I need to go back and check is, are they going to propagate it further?
Yeah.
You know, have I signed documents to prevent them from sending it on to people that might use it
yes.
in the way I don't want it used?
Okay, and here's the reason, you know, when you became a patient, we gave you this great big white notebook, and all of your labs and all of your medical records get, you know, we give them to you to go put in the notebook, so you have a copy of all your records. You can take that to your doctor and show it to him, okay, and get his opinion and so on. But if we don't send it to them, we have no obligation. You're allowed to show it, we don't.
I think, though, he's concerned about whether the other doctors can release our information, and I don't believe they can disclose anything we've sent to
them. Well, once it's in their chart.
No, once it's in their chart, it's their property now.
Oh. Yeah,
that's right. If it's in their chart, it's theirs.
I know we don't release the records.
So we don't, but if an insurance company calls them and says, release documents on a patient Jane Doe, they have to release everything in their records on Jane Doe. It doesn't matter where it came from.
Yeah. Okay. But we can get their records, and they become part of ours, but then we don't tell anybody what we've got. Okay. So if ours get in theirs, they have to tell. If theirs get in ours, we still keep it secret.
I know our policy has been to not forward records from other providers on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
So I think it's something we haven't discussed on the air much, but we are one of the few clinics in the country that actually give you doctor-patient confidentiality. And I about choked when I saw Obamacare all those years ago say, and now the doctors have to tell the IRS about their patients. And I said, why on earth does the IRS need that? Anyway.
Okay, Randy, hope that helps.
I hear the music. Yeah. One more thing to mention, intermittent fasting that was brought up on the early program. That is fantastic. I've lost 25 pounds. My wife has lost 50. And she's the size that she was when we were dating in college.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Intermittent fasting. Thank you for that, Randy. Taking a break now. And we'll go to Steve next when we come back from the break. And also hear about a special event happening on June 24th. As Leading Edge Medicine continues in just a few moments.
Hey, hey, Paula. I want to marry you. Hey, hey, Paula.
Okay, back to Leading Edge Medicine and your questions. We have a few people on the line. I think we're pretty much full up with questions, so we'll get to those calls real quick. But Randy, before the break, mentions intermittent fasting and a program that you talk about quite a bit, Dr.
Yeah,
Brazel.
Dr. Brazel, I know you love it. Let's hear it.
So the exciting thing about intermittent fasting that we can find is that it generally works very well for a lot of people. Not everybody should be skipping meals. You know, people think I'm just going to skip a meal, that's fasting. And most people shouldn't be doing a long period of fasting without medical supervision because they're on medication that lowers their blood sugar, their blood pressure. So we don't want to just say everyone do it. It's for everybody. But people who do it wisely tend to have profound results. And the first part is awareness. I don't have to be up at midnight eating a bowl of cereal. And most people that are doing that think that they should be doing that because they feel hungry. And once they get away from those midnight snacks, their blood sugar levels start to come back down to normal. Their sleep is better. They're on less cholesterol medication, maybe less hypertension medication. And if they're trying to lose weight, it might be easier to do. But it doesn't always cause a lot of weight loss because if you're making up for those calories in the few hours that you're eating, your body figures it out and it waits for them. So the goal isn't to do one meal a day. The goal isn't to do the alternate day fasting. The goal is to tighten the window in which your calories are consumed so that your body has a period of time to digest them, burn them off, and repair the damage in your body. We're talking about GABA earlier. You know, when you're sleeping, when you're resting and the GABA is really active in your body, you can start doing the repair work of the cellular tissue. So we have a program at our product at our company called Prolon, and it's a 5-day fasting mimicking diet for people who just aren't ready to do the full step into the food abstinence entirely part. And Prolon is a great program for a lot of people. It's something that you can buy commercially. You can get it through our clinic with a little discount, I think, for some of our patients if they're investing in doing it for a few months. And Prolon makes it easier to start changing your relationship with how you eat your food. And it puts you on about a 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. schedule, usually of having small measured snacks throughout the day that induce a mild amount of ketosis. So you have calorie restriction, you have time restriction, and then you also are getting rid of all the additives that you don't need that stimulate overeating. All the processed food isn't there. And it helps people transition towards a weight loss program or dive deeper into the intermittent fasting pool, and in this case, time-restricted eating, is a window of time that you commit to eating your calories and a window of time in which you commit to not eating any calories. And a lot of us like to eat at night. We like to eat with our families. We like the bowl of ice cream. We like that extra glass of wine. And what they're finding with the time-restricted eating fasting is that when you eat later at night, it hurts you more than if you eat earlier in the day. Mm. But we like to eat with our family. So the general rule of thumb I try to follow for intermittent fasting is try to get in all your calories by 7 p.m. And if you have a diabetes diagnosis or prediabetes, the earlier you eat in the day, the better you are. And then you have time to burn it off before you go to sleep. Because when you're sleeping, you're not burning it off so much as you're storing that fat for later. Mm-hmm. And that's where people can find out. The midnight snack eaten at 6 p.m. might not have the same effect.
Right.
And then so just learning to shift it toward earlier in the day, the hours that we're awake, the hours that the sun is up. And this is the studies that are coming out, the Salk Institute in California, studying it with relationship to sleep. Stress hormone cortisol goes down when you're asleep, when your melatonin levels would go up if you were actually in bed instead of watching TV. So all of these things interact with our blood sugar and our stress response. So all of these things that we can shift towards a natural cycle of when it's dark, you're not eating, you're going to sleep, and you're sleeping, you're going to have better results with your blood sugar control, your blood pressure control, your cholesterol management. These are all things related to heart disease, diabetic risk. Cancer risk goes up exponentially when we have higher blood sugars and are eating late at night. And then, of course, what we're all fear is developing dementia. And dementia is sort of the downstream effect of all of these diseases. If we live long enough with them, we will more likely get cognitive decline. So it has many benefits for us. And it just takes a little reorienting what we do. And what I love about the Prolon is it helps people get there faster. It just really takes that the taste buds that are so addicted to that thing that you have to have every day. And you can't have it on Prolon. I promise you, you can't. So it just gets that right out of there in about 5 days. And most people after about 5 days feel lighter. They feel more energetic. And, of course, their cravings go down. And I think, Dr. Umat, you might have some comments about that as well.
Yeah, no, I've spoken about it often on this show, and I know you like it. So I wanted you to kind of explain to the listeners what your thought process on that was. The way I describe it is like cellular house cleaning. You invited the cleaning lady. She came in and she basically vacuumed all the junk out.
You got out of her way.
Yeah. And you know, it helps with autophagy, cellular regeneration. And so there are lots of advantages to doing that. And then combined with an intermittent fasting, you just get a head start. And that was, you know, what the previous caller had called about. So kind of follow up with that.
So they go very well together. And then, of course, apply to making hormones work better. Hormones work better in a body that is a good circadian rhythm.
Okay, find out more about that at lmclinic.com, I assume, or you can also call the clinic at 866-86-YOUNG. That's called Prolon. Been on hold a long time. Steve, I think we have time for your question real quickly. What's happening, Steve?
How can we help
Great,
you, Steve?
Thank you very much. I'll make it quick. My wife is going to have shoulder surgery in August for a flap tear and a full tear of the supraspinatus tendon. My question quickly is, can she do anything between now and the surgery date to make it a more successful surgery?
Yeah, she absolutely can. Is she a patient of ours?
She is not, no.
Okay. So generally, the fitter you are before you go into a surgical procedure, the better your outcome will be coming out of it. So remain active, remain healthy, watch your diet carefully, use nutrients and multivitamins to help you, and physical activity. The activity and watching your diet, being very, very careful about what you eat, is really going to be helpful for her and give her a better outcome. I've had patients with chemotherapy who got cancer, and they were the best patients in the doctor's clinic just because of physical activity alone and watching that diet. If there's one thing you can cut out from your diet, it'll be sugar. Reduce the sugar content. Right. Don't worry about the calorie content. Reduce the sugar intent, because sugar is pro-inflammatory. The less sugar she eats, the better her outcome will be. And stay physically active. It may hurt. She may not want to do it, but the more you walk, the more active you are, the better your outcome will be. Okay? I hope this helps her, and I wish her a good outcome, Steve.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Maybe we have time still to fit in one more call. I think we had Lisa. Is Lisa still on the line?
Lisa, are you there?
Okay. Lisa dropped off. Okay. Well, it gives us a couple of minutes then to talk about the Gallery Health Fair coming up on June 24th at the Kirkland Clinic only. You want to remind us what that is?
Absolutely. On June 24th, invitation to people who are listeners but not longevity patients to come in for a blood draw for the Gallery test to detect early presence of cancer. 50 different types of cancer, therefore $50 per cancer detection, $1,250 test that we will add to that longevity's blood draw of discounted heavily to $250 for a total of $1,495 for that event, which allows you 1 hour physician time to review all your labs. Done only by appointment, but if you're interested in the Gallery test for early detection of cancer and in longevity labs, then we will offer this on June 24th.
Okay, only by appointment, though, so call in and make that appointment now. 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG. Really had a lot of fun today. First time hosting the Leading Edge Medicine program.
It was so nice to have you, Mark.
Thank you so
much. See you in person, and nice to meet you, Christine.
Thanks for helping introduce me to the team.
Yeah, and thank you, Dr. Brazel, for being here with us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Dr. Umat.
And Lynette should be back next week. Thank you for listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic.